This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. After weeks of contesting the election results, incumbent Governor Pat McCrory admitted defeat yesterday. The video concession speech congratulated Governor-elect Roy Cooper, but the lame duck incumbent says he still has work to do.
Now, during my remaining weeks as governor, this team will be focusing on developing a financial plan to be approved in a special legislative session to help our citizens and communities impacted by Hurricane Matthew and by the current wildfires in the western region of our state.
Questions remain about that special session and what else it might entail. Joining me now is WNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBerry. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, Frank.
Let's talk first about the election. It dragged on for almost a month. The governor suggesting that there were irregularities. There was an exhaustive investigation into the vote. No irregularities. The governor lost, Roy Cooper. Tell us about the challenges and how they were summarily and one at a time overturned.
It was a close race, and I think that is important to note. 4.7 million votes cast, but these two were separated by just less than 1%. And in the hours and days that followed election night on November 8th, these allegations emerged about voter fraud in more than half of North Carolina's counties, alleging that felons had voted and that people who were no longer alive had voted. A 101-year-old veteran in Guilford County was accused of voting in two states. And one by one, these claims were thrown out by local election boards. And we should note, again, as we have on the program before, that all election boards in the state have a majority of Republicans, 2-1 Republican at the local level, 3-2 Republican at the state level. And they were tossed because there was not evidence to support or substantiate such claims. And, you know, at the end of the day, there was no evidence that was introduced to demonstrate there is widespread voter fraud in this state. And we will wonder, and perhaps we will get a better sense of it in 2017, 18, 2020, about how this kind of rhetoric and how this kind of narrative affects, if at all, voter turnout and attitudes toward voting in North Carolina.
No, but it's interesting because now we have an object lesson and a real full investigation of claims that critics of the Republicans had said there is no voter fraud. And of course, there had been investigations in other places, but not here in North Carolina. Now we have proof in North Carolina that there's no substantial fraud. So again, going forward might be very interesting. Cooper campaign hosting a celebratory gathering tonight, putting the transition plans in place. What can we expect?
7:30 NC State. This is a bit of it's not a victory lap in the sense of what President-elect Donald Trump, we're seeing him do in several different states, but this is a one-stop victory celebration for Democratic Governor-elect Roy Cooper. We're expecting Mike Morgan, who has been elected to serve in the state Supreme Court, to appear with Cooper tonight at the campus of NC State, and this is the beginning of Cooper's administration. You know, perhaps he will lay some sort of foundation in terms of policy, and perhaps he will extend an olive branch to Phil Berger and Tim Moore. We'll get a little bit more on that tonight. But, you know, we expect a divisive relationship between the executive mansion and the Republican supermajority powers at the General Assembly.
And before that tension plays out, one last shot by Governor McCrory, a special session next week. It says he's going to address funding for victims of Hurricane Matthew and the wildfires. What else are they likely to take up?
Likely, you know, nothing else is likely at this point. The Republicans have made a concerted effort to stash more money away into the general fund out of state surpluses in recent years. Some of that is going to be allocated for disaster cleanup. You know, there have been rumors floating around for several weeks now that the General Assembly would convene in this special session and they would take up an unrelated issue which deals with the state Supreme Court. At that point, these are just rumors. The leadership has said those serious conversations have not even taken place about that issue. But the general idea here, or the general rumor, is that the General Assembly would come back. They are allowed, based on statute, to add an 8th and a 9th seat to the Supreme Court. And then, as kind of a last act, it is possible that the governor would appoint an 8th and 9th justice to the state Supreme Court. Again, this is rumor. This is innuendo. This is not substantiated at this point, but is something that a lot of people have been talking about in political circles.
But these suspicions, again, founded on what happened with HB 2, ostensibly a session called to nullify Charlotte's law the anti-discrimination law, but also slipped in there a law that made it illegal to file lawsuits for discrimination, not part of the original deal, snuck in at the very last minute on an eight-hour session. So again, this fuels suspicions that something else might happen, not to mention the fact that there's been a new rule that would allow retired justices to break a tie on the Supreme Court. Again, very little fanfare. It was just done without the public notice. This is the kind of thing that fuels suspicions that they may be up to something else and use this for other purposes.
Right. And the part of the reason I should backtrack for just a moment and say this was a 4-3 split on the state Supreme Court, 4 Republicans, 3 Democrats, until November 8th, when Mike Morgan, a Superior Court judge out of Wake County, won the 7th seat, essentially swinging. He beat an incumbent in Bob Edmonds. So this is now a 4-3 Democratic split. Oddly enough, the ruling that you're mentioning came earlier on Election Day. Chief Justice Mark Martin, made this announcement that essentially he will be able to appoint temporary or substitute justices. This is in the event of a recusal and if there's a 3-3 split on the court. And this caught some legal scholars really by surprise. I suspect there will be some sort of legal challenge to this. Ironically, the state high court, which now has that 4-3 Democratic split, could have influence in deciding this matter. And we should remember that this whole Supreme Court thing almost went to a retention election, which was the General Assembly and the governor wanted to hold an election for only Bob Edmonds, who was the Republican incumbent, and they wanted to have only him on the ballot to whether or not to retain him. And if voters voted no, then the governor would appoint someone. So really eliminating voters from the process of deciding that 7th justice. Now, the courts decided that was unconstitutional, and that's why we had the contentious and highly expensive Supreme Court race last month.
All right. As we said, Pat McCrory defeated. He'll be out of office, but he may not be out of work for long. There are reports this morning that he's scheduled to meet with President-elect Donald Trump. What do we know about that?
So the plot thickens. Interesting, right? So President-elect Donald Trump will be in Fayetteville on his victory lap tour, thank you tour, I believe it's called, tonight. And the initial report out of Reuters is that Governor McCrory will be meeting with the president-elect tomorrow. Now, there are 20 cabinet appointments that require Senate confirmation. Trump, as of now, has nominated folks to fill half of those. And this is walking out on a limb here to an extent. But of the remaining cabinet positions that haven't been filled, if we're thinking that potentially they're discussing a cabinet position, and that might be really a lofty thing to expect. But if that's possible, it strikes me that the one most appropriate for Governor McCrory would be Labor Secretary. So we will see if that is indeed what this is about, if this is more of a formality, if there's, just a place for Governor McCrory to be an aide or some kind of advisor in a Trump administration. Interesting indeed, though.
Talking to WUNC Capital Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery today on The State of Things. In other news, big news yesterday, U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments on North Carolina's congressional districts. A lower court has ruled they were unconstitutional. What was the Supreme Court hearing about?
They're hearing about race and partisanship. It's interesting in that one of the most litigated congressional districts is the North Carolina 12th, which if you think of one of those like old oak trees, one of those big trees you'll see down in like Charleston, it looks like a big sweeping branch. And it extends from Charlotte. It used to extend all the way from Charlotte through Winston and pockets of Greensboro to Durham. And this was known as the I-85 congressional seat, originally created out of the 1990 census. It was designed to give an opportunity for African-American voters to elect someone who is a minority to Congress. Over time, there have been challenges, and this went to the Supreme Court 23 years ago, I believe. It was back in 1993, and justices ruled that you can't draw a congressional boundary based on race, but you can do it on partisan districts. So after the Republicans took control of the General Assembly in 2010, they redrew congressional boundaries. A challenge was brought thereafter that they took race, ethnicity too far into account. So this is a very fine line that justices and some of the justices, Stephen Breyer among them, who have already weighed in on this before, are trying to navigate both partisanship and minority representation and the best way to try to achieve that.
Well, as we said, Governor McCrory's prolonged challenges to the election results of November 8th have pretty much demonstrated that there are not widespread irregularities in the voting process. However, the courts have found that in voting legislation, the Republicans have been pretty successful at voter suppression, both with redistricting and voter ID. And the News and Observer yesterday, a pretty scathing editorial about how much it costs to defend those laws that the courts have found unconstitutional. A lot of money so far.
Yeah, so far, right? And that's the key, that there's no real indication that that's going to stop. We're talking about more than $10 million defending several laws that have been deemed unconstitutional and that have been struck down. Now, Republicans will say part of the reason that they had to go and obtain outside counsel and spend all this money is because the attorney general was Roy Cooper. He was a Democrat, and he refused to defend these laws. Now, Cooper has maintained that there was nothing to defend because these laws were not legitimate and they should never have moved forward in the first place. So a big bill has already manifested itself. But as we think about this this foundation, whether it's perceived or flimsy or however you would like to describe it, I think it's only natural to wonder what Republicans are going to attempt to do with state voting law in the long session. And then again, legal challenges will come, and this will likely end back up, if they move forward with it, end back up in the federal courts. And the attorney general elect is a Democrat, Josh Stein. So likely more money to be spent on outside lawyers for laws that could very well be struck down by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Frank.
Jeff DeBerry, WNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Just ahead, activists in Standing Rock celebrate after the Army announced it won't run a pipeline under a lake near a Sioux Reservation. But not so fast. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.